This class is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmas Me'ira Chaya Nechama Bracha Bas David Mordechai.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. We are starting a new Chumash today, the Chumash of Bamidbar, and we are at page 726-27. 726, 27, 27 in English. There are two major topics in this week's portion. One is the counting of the Jewish people, and the other one is the way they camped in the desert, what we call Dgalim, right? Because each tribe had a flag, and a flag in Hebrew is Degel, and in the plural, Dgalim. We discussed those topics in the past many times. I want to look into the Psukim, raise a few questions. Some of them we did raise in the past, some are new. But the way we'll explain it will be a way we did not yet till today. So let's open up and see what the Torah tells us. We are starting with the counting, okay, in verse number one, top of page 727. So the Torah says Hashem spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first of the second month, in the second year, after their exodus from the land of Egypt, saying, take a census of the entire assembly of the children of Israel, according to their families, according to their father's household, by number of the names, every male according to their head count. Okay? And then the Torah tells us from 20 and above, and then the Torah tells us really what Moshe did. Right? The Torah tells us it's not only Moshe and Aaron who are doing it, they're doing it with the heads of the tribes. And later on, we'll have the results of the counting. I want to first look at the first verse and see that if you pay attention, we know a lot of this information, and there would have been no reason to tell it to us again from the point of view of just to know where we are and what time it is. It tells us Hashem spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. We know it. The Torah did not tell us that they left the desert. The Torah told us that they came to the desert. Obviously, they are there. Next, in the tent of meeting, that's always where Hashem speaks to Moshe in the desert. So why is it mentioned? On the first of the second month, and then we are told in the second year after the exodus from the land of Egypt. This part that it's the second year we can figure out by what's written before, because we know already about other things, right, that can indicate it. And he tells them, take a census. So question number one, why does the Torah tell us all the details that we know already when the Torah wants to count the Jewish people? That's question number one. Why all the information? But there is a much more basic question about this counting. I want you to go, please, to page 531. It's in the book of Shmot, towards the end of the book of Shmot. And over there, the Torah tells us the following. The Torah tells us what was brought as a donation to the Mishkan, for the building of the Mishkan. Among the donations for the building of the Mishkan was a half a shekel. Each person from 20 and above had to bring a half a shekel. From this, the sockets of the Mishkan, the Adanim, were built. So if we know how many shekelim were there, and we know that every male above 20 brought a half a shekel, we know the number, right? We double the number of shekelim, and we know the number of the Jewish people. And the Torah really tells it to us. The Torah says, if you look at verse number 26, okay, 25, let's start with 25. The Torah says the following. The silver of the census of the community was 100 talents, 1,775 shekels. in the sacred shekel. So we are told how much money was collected from the Jewish people. And via this shkalim, there was a census taking place that is discussed in the beginning of Parashat Ki Tisa. In the beginning of Parashat Ki Tisa, Hashem told Moshe to count the Jewish people via the shkalim that everyone brings. And then the Torah tells us, a beka for every head, a half shekel in the sacred shekel of for everyone who passed through the census, takers from 20 years of age and up for the 603,550. Okay, so we are told in verse number 27, the 100 talents of silver were to cast the sockets of the sanctuary and the sockets of the partition, 100 sockets for 100 talents, a talent per socket. Okay, so basically what we are told here is that there was a census before already. When was this census? When Hashem told Moshe to tell the Jewish people to bring a half a shekel in order to use it for the sockets of the Mishkan. It's discussed in the beginning of Ki Tisa, and here we have the result. Now, when was it? It was when Hashem commanded the Jewish people to build the Mishkan. When was this? When Moshe Rabbeinu came down on Yom Kippur, after being for the last time for 40 days in Shamayim, and came with the second tablets, and with forgiveness from Hashem on the golden calf, they were commanded as a sign of forgiveness to build the Mishkan. So there was a census already. We are now 7 months later, because if you calculate from the end of Yom Kippur, that is still in the first year of coming out of Mitzrayim. They came out of Mitzrayim on the 14th of Nisan. 7 months later, they were at the end of Yom Kippur. Then Hashem said to build the Mishkan and counted them. And we have the numbers that we got. And a few months after, on the beginning of Iyar, which is just a few months later, Hashem told Moshe to count them again. So question number one, they were just counted. Why do we count them again? To complete the picture, I want to say that there was even a prior counting. When the Jewish people came out of Mitzrayim, Hashem counted them. It's written in the book of Shemot, when they come out of Mitzrayim, how many they were. And they are called there the army of Hashem. They became a nation, they became the soldiers, the army of Hashem. And you create an army, you want to know how many soldiers are there, right? So they were counted when they came out of Mitzrayim. Not that long after, just a few months after the golden calf, another counting. And why? So Rashi explains in Shmot, in the Pasuk that we are discussing, that being that there was the golden calf in between, many were killed. So he compares it to a shepherd who had a flock, and then wolves came and, you know, came for prey, and some of them were killed. So he wants to know how many are left. So the same, there was the golden calf. It took a price. Some Jewish people died. So Hashem wants to count them again because he loves them. He cares about them and he wants to see how many remained. So this we understand. We understand why when they came out of Mitzrayim. We understand why after the golden calf. But why such a short time after do we have again count an account, right, a census? And what makes the question even harder is that we have a number here of how many people did we have. And the Torah tells us in verse number 26, at the end of the verse, okay, the Torah tells us, right, that we have 3,550. So says the number. If we look now in Parashat Bamidbar, where they are counted for the third time, and we don't yet know why again, okay? At the end of chapter 1, we get the total. And if you look there, okay, it's page number 732, verse number 46, 731, I'm sorry, 731, verse number 46. The Torah tells us all their countings were 600 and 3,550, the exact same number. So if there is no change in number, what's the point in counting? Okay, and why to count all together? Even if there would have been a different number, no nation takes a census every half a year, right? So far, we have a few questions. A, why to count them all together? Okay, second, the count is the same in both. The subtotal is the same in both, so what's the point in it? And if we look into the details of the counting, we'll have another major, major question. The Torah counts the number of each of the tribes. If you look at page number 729, each tribe is counted separately, and we are given the number of people in the tribe. Like in verse number 20, there were the sons of Reuven, firstborn of Israel. Okay, I'm going to 21, to the number. Their count for the tribe of Reuven, 46,500. And that's how the Torah goes further. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, whatever order it is, but after every counting of every tribe, we have the number. As then, as we saw before, at the end of the chapter, the Torah tells us the subtotal. Now, can't we do the calculation by ourselves? We know the Torah is very careful with every verb and whatever we can figure out and is obvious without being told, the Torah doesn't tell us. Why would the Torah give us the subtotal? Later on, the Torah counts again by the order of camping. There were three tribes on each direction. The Mishkan was in the middle, three tribes on each direction, right? And again, each tribe is counted with its number. Let's say the first one, where Yehudah, Issachar, and Zvulun, on the east. So the Torah tells us the number of Yehudah, the number of Shimon, the number of Levi. And then again, the Torah gives us the subtotal for the three. And after doing it for each direction, so we have four times a subtotal of three tribes each, the Torah gives us the subtotal of the whole nation again. What's these repetitions? First, each tribe, then the subtotal, then three tribes together, each one with its number, and then the subtotal, and then the whole nation in the subtotal. Repetitious, 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 and we could calculate all of it by ourselves. Now, there is a hint in the very beginning of the chapter that this is what Hashem wants us to do. Because if you go back to verse number 2, it's written, take a census of the entire assembly of the Jewish, of the children of Israel. If we are told, take a census of the nation of Israel, we understand that it's the whole nation. If it's part of the nation, it's not the nation. Why are we told, call Adad Bnei Israel, everybody? So we have many questions here. A, why to count them all together? Second, what's the point in counting if the number is the same as the counting that was made, that was done just a few months earlier? Why to tell us to count everybody? It's obvious. And why the repetition of the numbers of each tribe and of the totals many times. So we asked some of those questions before. I want to bring first Rashi, which is very famous, and we brought it in the test, and we'll go from there deeper. So Rashi says, because Hashem loves them. There is no question why Hashem counts them again. You know, when a father loves his children very much, he likes to think how many children does he have. Count them, show their pictures, be busy with it. The fact that he said it once is not enough. He says it again. It's an indication of love. That's what Rashi says. But there is more to it. Okay? There must be a reason why at this particular place. So we are told that this third counting, this third censor that took place in the beginning of Parshat Bamidbar, came about because it was right after Hashem dwelled in the midst of the Jewish people. The end of Chumash Shmot is telling us that Hashem dwelled in the Mishkan. Chumash Vayikra is not a story, it's mitzvot. So the beginning of Bamidbar, in terms of the story of the narrative, follows the end of Shmot. Hashem just dwelled in the midst of the Jewish people. That's a very special moment. And at the time that Hashem wants to dwell in the midst of the Jewish people, when the Shechina came to be with the Jewish people on an ongoing basis, they are counted again because it's a special moment. Okay? Like when they came out of Mitzrayim, they were counted, right? When the Shechina is there already, when the Mishkan is built, there is another way to create a relationship with Hashem. The concept of the army of Hashem got depth that it did not have before. It became stronger. And that's why they are counted again. Even though in numbers they are the same, but in terms of the quality of the relationship, it's more. So they are counted again. It's not the same army. Numbers, yes, but in terms of quality, it's not the same army. Sorry. Meaning it's a moment of great love between Hashem and the Jewish people. Because the dwelling of the divine in the midst of the Jewish people is the purpose of creation. And it was a very special time. And that's why Hashem counts it. And being that this is the case, all the details in verse number one, when it was, where it was, in many details, are because it's such a special moment. Special moments we want to remember with all the details that are part of it. Let's say the day of our wedding, right? We want to know where it was, what was the color theme, which flowers did we choose, what did we wear, from when was it in terms of the time of the day, and so on. Something that is beloved, we want to know details about it. And being that it's a very beloved moment, so the Torah elaborates about this counting beyond giving us other information. It's information we know already. But so to speak, Hashem enjoys repeating it because it's a special moment. I want to address now the concept of the repetition in all those countings as we saw, not only repetitions, but giving numbers and then the subtotal. Okay? So the Midrash helps us understand it. And I want to read to you the Midrash. The Midrash says as follows. Why is it written, elevate the head of the Jewish people? It's a very interesting way to say counting. Elevate the head. In order to fulfill what's written in Psalms. What is written in Psalms? Lo asachen lechol goy. Hashem did not do it to any nation. Meaning, don't take this census thus as a way to get a number. It's something very different. It's something that separates the Jewish people from all other nations. It's an elevation that belongs to the Jewish people only, and it separates them from other nations. How is counting the Jewish people separating them from all other nations? Very interesting. So the Midrash, in order to explain what happens in our big portion, brings a pasuk from Psalms. Hashem did not do this to any other nation. And the Midrash says, what is the this that Hashem didn't do to any other nation? Among other things, one interpretation is discounting. You don't understand it. How is the counting of a nation separating them from any other nation? Don't other nations take a census from time to time and know the number? So let's see one way to understand this Midrash. To understand this Midrash, we have to go to another Midrash that is brought in Song of Songs, in Shir HaShirim. There is a pasuk, a verse in Shir HaShirim that says, Achati Yonati Tamati. One is my wholesome dove. There is a dove, a yonah, and it's a wholesome dove, meaning a special dove, and it's one. What does it mean? We know that the book Song of Songs is a description of the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. And we hear there how Hashem describes the Jewish people and how the Jewish people describe Hashem. And it reveals the relationship between us and Hashem all along history. It starts from the creation of the Jewish nation till the times of Mashiach and describes the ups and downs in the relationship and the specialty of it. So one way that Hashem describes the Jewish people is that they are like a dove, a wholesome dove, and it's one dove. What does it mean? What's the praise here? What is so special? So the Midrash continues and explains. The Midrash says other nations have also a number, meaning any nation can be counted and we can have a number of how many people are in the nation. But the Midrash says they don't have a total. Very interesting. If you have a number, you have a total. I want to say the words in Hebrew too. Yesh lahem minyan, meaning they are counted. Limnot is to count. Minyan is a number, right? Ve'ein lahem schum, but they don't have a subtotal. Aval Israel, but the Jewish people, yesh lahem minyan, we have a number. The Torah says 600,000 plus, right? 300 and 550, right? But they have also a subtotal. As we saw, it is repeated many times, the subtotal. One time after counting the whole nation, then after counting each degel, each three tribes that camped in one direction, and then again, the subtotal of the whole nation repeated again. And the question is, what's the point in it? What does it tell me? How does this separate the Jewish people from all other nations? So there is a book called Arugot HaBosem, Hasidic Sefer, and he explains something very beautifully. He says, every group of objects can be counted, and we can have a number that tells us how many are in the group. For example, we have, let's say, many cut trees or many trees in a forest. We can count and get a number of how many trees are there. Let's say we enter a hardware store and there are drawers of different objects. Let's say there are screws, there are pieces of glass in different shapes, and so on and so on. We can count each and every one of them and give a number. But let's go back to the two examples. What if, instead of pieces of wood, we have a table? Will we say the number of pieces of wood in the table? No. We'll say there is one table, even though there are four legs and there is a plate on top of them, meaning at least five pieces. So we don't say we have five pieces of wood. We say we have one table. If from all the parts that are in the hardware store, a watch was created, we will not say we have five screws, one piece of glass, one band, and so on and so on. We'll say we have a watch. What's the difference between the first case, when we had just pieces of wood, and screws, a piece of glass, a band, separated from each other, or when they are creating something, like a table or a watch? When we have a table or a watch, all the pieces, all the parts serve a purpose. And this makes them one. They are all part of a whole that serve a certain purpose. Being that this is the case, each one is essential. And the object that was built from them is not complete unless we have all the parts put together. So going back to the forest, does it matter so much if I have a million trees in the forest or a million and one? Of course, every tree is important, but the forest is the same forest with a million pieces, with a million trees or a million and one. So we have here a number, but we don't have a total. We have a total number, but we don't have a total, because all pieces together don't create one thing, that each part of it is essential, and that's why we look at it as one, not as many. Let's go now to the census in our week's portion, the census of the Jewish people and the census of other nations. Obviously, everything that exists in this world has a reason why it exists. Every non-Jew that exists is here because Hashem wanted him to be here, and he can fulfill a role. But if he will be there or will not be there is not essential for the very existence of the world. If he'll be there, he can contribute. But without his contribution, the world won't be shaken up. Not so when we speak about the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation is a wholesome dove. It's a one. Every Jew is necessary, like every leg of the table is essential, and every piece of the watch is essential. So they have a value as individuals, but they are looked upon as one. And if you think about it, we say it every Shabbat afternoon in the Mincha prayer. We say, Ata Echad, you are one, Veshimcha Echad, and you are one, Umi Kamcha Yisrael, Goy Echad Ba'aretz. Who else is like the Jewish people? And what's the specialty of the Jewish people? It's one nation on earth. On a superficial level, oh no, it's not one nation on earth. There are 70 others. But the concept of a nation, meaning the concept of a one, applies to the Jewish people. Other nations are many, many individuals. The Jewish nation is one. Now, what does it mean? It means that everyone is essential because they all fulfill a purpose, the same purpose. And they are all essential for the fulfillment of purpose. Hashem created the world in order to bring the dwelling of the divine here to this world, to this physical reality. Who is in charge of this job from the time of Abraham Avinu? It's we who are in charge of it. And everyone is essential for the fulfillment of this purpose, what makes us one. It's like pieces of a puzzle. Even if it will be 10,000 pieces, if there will be one missing, the picture is not there. Something is missing. It's essential for the picture. So we are one. Now, this is expressed also in the words of Bilam. Bilam was a big enemy. He came to curse us. But Hashem forced him to bless. And the blessings have a beautiful description of what the Jewish nation is all about. And one of the verses that Bilam said is, Mi mana afar Yaakov? Who counted, who can count the dust of Yaakov? We know that Hashem told Abraham that his children will be like the dust of the earth, right? So he looks at the Jewish nation, uses the terms that Abraham said about the Jewish nation, described with the Jewish nation, and he says, Mi mana, who counted, who can count the dust of Jacob? And then he adds, Umisapar Rova Israel, another expression that says again, who can count Israel? Why the duplication? Because he speaks about every individual, the minyan. This exists also by non-Jewish people, a number of individuals. But then he adds, there is something unique about the Jewish people because they are Israel. As you pay attention, the first part of the Pasuk speaks about Yaakov, and the second speaks about Israel, the two names of Yaakov. We know that Yaakov is used whenever the Jewish people are not on the highest level. Then they are like the dust of the earth, not like the stars. Israel is when the Jewish nation are at their best, right? They are like Kel, Issar Kel, right? Israel was the name that the angel gave Yaakov after he overcame evil. It's a very high level, the angel of evil, right? Let's look at the name Israel. It's written that the name Israel is initials of a few words. The Yud stands for Yesh, the Shin for Shishim, Reish Ribo, Shishim Ribo, Otiyot, letters, La Torah, to the Torah. Now together, the word Israel means, can, if we take it as beginning of words, right? So the abbreviations, you say? I hope I say it right. Right? It is Yesh Shishim Ribo Otiyot LaTorah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Very interesting. Why would the name of Israel be called or connected to the number of people in the Torah? Interestingly enough, when you count the letters in the Torah, there are more than 600,000. And when you count the Jewish people, the number is also more than 600,000. So what does it mean? First, what's the connection between the Jewish people and the Torah? That's quite obvious. In the very beginning of the Torah, Bereshit, the first word in the Torah, Bereshit, in the beginning, Rashi says that the word Bereshit is Bishvil Reshit, for Reshit. The Bet stands for Bishvil, what it can be used for in Hebrew. Why Rashi explains it in this way, I won't go into. For this, we have to go into the Pasuk and what's the difficulty there and how it solves it. It's not our topic for the moment. But one interpretation of the word Bereshit is that for things that are called Reshit in the Torah, the world was created. And Rashi tells us, what are the things that are called by the Torah? Reshit, Torah, and the Jewish people. So Bereshit means for the Torah and the Jewish people, Hashem created the world. We want to explain it a little on a deeper level. We all understand, yes, the Jewish people are those who will bring the world to purpose. The world has a purpose. The purpose is written in the Torah, told to us in the Torah. So for the Torah and the Jewish people, the world was created. But I want to go a little deeper with it. Why does the number of letters in the Torah supposed to be corresponding to the number of letters, to the number of people in the Jewish nation? And why only 600,000? There are more, right? So first, let's understand, what does it mean that the Torah, the letters of the Torah, are the same number as the number of the Jewish people? The Torah is the blueprint of creation. The Torah is a spiritual well that was created, has to be revealed and actualized in this world. And the Torah has 600,000 letters. As we said, there are more. But the roots of the spiritual potential in the Torah are 600,000. And each root can grow many branches, many leaves, many fruits. But there are 600,000 roots, spiritual roots to this world that have to be revealed here and have to be actualized here. By who? By 600,000 people that came out of Egypt. The fact that this generation accepted the Torah brought the world to its purpose. If the Jewish people would have said, like any other nation, when they were asked, "Do you want the Torah?" "No, we don't want it," the world would not continue to exist. Hashem would have brought it back to nothingness because the purpose is defeated. So each Jew has the ability to actualize one aspect of spirituality that the world was created for. The world was created to reveal, but it's the roots of the souls. The same way that in the Torah it's 600,000 roots, the same way it's 600,000 souls. What does it mean there are 600,000 roots in the Torah and 6,000 roots of Jewish people? We know every letter in the Torah can be interpreted in many, many, many ways. And that's why we say it's a root. There are explanations according to the pshat, simple understanding, drash, things that are hinted in the Torah, and secrets that are hinted there. And they are endless. In each generation, more and more are revealed. Every person who studies Torah has his own insight. If we look at different commentaries of the Torah, everyone enlightens the words of the Torah in a different way. And it's a combination of all that was written up till now and all that will be revealed in the future that is contained in the Torah. And it's only touching the surface because the Torah is godliness and godliness is endless. So, in order to reveal these 600,000 categories of spirituality, who has many, each of them, many, many details in them, the Jewish nation was created. The generation that stood at Sinai, the generations that came out of Mitzrayim, corresponded to these 600,000, and they are the roots of all Jewish souls. The same way that there are categories and details in the Torah, there are categories and details in terms of souls too. Our sages tell us that all of us stood at Sinai. How? Because all of us are contained in the roots of those 600,000. And the more Torah is revealed by Jewish people, the more aspects of Jewish souls are actualized. The more Jewish people comes to their purpose and actualize the spirituality that Hashem made accessible to us by creating this world. Okay, so the Jewish people are not just numbers. The same way that if in the Torah one letter will be missing, it's not a kosher Sefer Torah. Not only one word, one letter, even part of a letter is missing, you can't read from the Torah. It doesn't have the holiness of a Torah. If it can be corrected, you correct it. If not, you have to bury it. The same way, if one Jew is missing, it means the total is nothing. And this is what the Torah tells us. By counting the Jewish people, not only as individuals, but giving us later on the subtotal. So first we start with the individuals. Everyone gives a half of a shekel. They go through Moshe and Aaron. And by approaching Moshe and Aaron, they are basically told what their job is as an individual. But each individual belongs also to a tribe. It's like each letter is part of a word. And then each letter is part of a sentence. And then of a portion, right? So the same way we are given the individuals in different groups, and each time we are given a subtotal. Because a letter is something complete, but a sentence is even more. And a chapter even more, and a book even more. Right? And the total for sure is even more. So the Torah indicates to us, you have to appreciate who you are. You are essential for bringing the world to purpose. You are not just an individual. First, you are an individual and you are unique. But if you don't actualize who you are, the world is not perfected yet. There is no substitute for you because you are part of the total. I have one nation, says Hashem. And that's why we have this and this. Now, this is expressed very, very beautifully in a pasuk in the Haftarah of this week. And this is the connection between the chapter of prophets that we read this week and our week's portion. As we know, the Haftarah is a chapter that we read. It was established to be read at the times that the non-Jewish people did not allow us to read the Torah on Shabbat because they understood the strength that it gives us. So we went around it by reading a chapter from prophets that its idea is connected to the portion. So we read today a pasuk from Moshe that says, "V'haya mispar b'nei Yisrael, kachol asher al sfat hayam," I'll soon translate, "asher lo imad v'lo yisaper merov." Translation. The number of the Jewish people, "V'haya mispar b'nei Yisrael," will be like the sand that is on the shore. Right? Next to the sea. That cannot be counted and cannot be measured. It seems that the two parts of the pasuk contradict each other. We start the pasuk by saying the number of the Jewish people is like the sand of the sea. And then we say it cannot be counted and it cannot be measured. So how did we say this is the number? There is a number. So is there a number or isn't there a number? Okay. So there are many interpretations to it. But one thing that the Midrash says is the Jewish people have a number, but it's not just a number. It's a subtotal. And the subtotal cannot be measured. Why? Because every Jew has a corresponding letter in the Torah. And the same way that we can constantly find more meaning and unravel more that is hidden in every word of the Torah, the same way we can also always unravel more and more of each Jew and of the nation as a whole. So if you speak about a number, yes, you can count and get a number like any other nation. But they don't have a subtotal. They are individuals, many individuals. Maybe they speak the same language. They live in the same place. But if one will be missing, it will remain the same nation and it won't make that big difference. Not so with the Jewish nation. It's a number that cannot be measured, a number that cannot be counted, not in quality and not in numbers. Because the more Torah we reveal, the more understandings of Torah we reveal, the more Jewish people will come to the world. Because the Torah creates reality. And we are in charge of doing it. So it is basically a very beautiful message of love. We are counted again to tell us who we are. If we appreciate what our potential is, we are motivated to go ahead and try to reveal it, try to actualize it. So that's how we start. And we are told that this generation, the generation who came out of Egypt, actualized their potential. And they are the foundation of the Jewish nation. We all stand on them. They are the roots. And we go out of those roots. Because they said, Na'aseh v'nishma, because they accepted the Torah willingly, happily. That's why we are here. The one Dov, that is a one nation, and not many, many people. Now, what is the main goal? What is the purpose? What tells us who we are? Let's look at the second chapter in our week's portion, the dwelling in the desert. What was in the center? In the center was the Mishkan, the place of the dwelling of Hashem. And all tribes were around it in a circle, in the same distance from the center, from the Mishkan. So you want to know what's the purpose of the Jewish nation? It's to maintain this existence. It's to maintain a reality where our life is focused on bringing the divine into this world and being close to it and achieving it. And in the desert, they did. And other nations were very jealous. It's a topic on its own. We discussed it in the past, what they told us and how we answered. Beautiful ideas. But we discussed it already. So it was revealed to everybody on earth while the Jewish people were in the desert that this is a unique nation. The whole existence was unique. Hashem was in the midst of them. When they needed to travel, the presence of the divine formed itself as a beam that showed them the direction and walked with them. Clouds of Hashem protected them, straightened the way for them, and so on and so on. The manna, the border of the veil of Miriam, all of it indicated to everybody, the whole world, this is a unique nation. That's why Amalek came to fight. They couldn't take this reality of one nation chosen from all the other. At that time, the purpose of creation was fulfilled and all nations saw who is doing it. Then the Jewish people entered the land of Israel. They are not anymore around the Mishkan in a circle as it was in the desert. But it was still the same reality. We were all over the land of Israel. Jerusalem is the center in terms of distance from the north and from the south, more or less. Right? It's in the heart of the country. Three times a year, we all left behind everything and came to Jerusalem. And the experience that we had there sustained us till the next time that we came. And whether came to Jerusalem, so that this is a nation where Hashem dwells with them. So it was more hidden than in the desert, but it was there. And the other nations knew it too. Because we mentioned it in the past, when the Jewish people went into the Beit HaMikdash, to the Beit HaMikdash three times a year. And it took, for some, about 5 weeks back and forth, plus being in Jerusalem. The enemies that were surrounding the state of Israel, like today, right, never desired to conquer the land when they were in Jerusalem, when they went on this journey. Miraculously, Hashem made them see wild animals surrounding the houses of the Jewish people. To them, it was real, even though it was just a vision, and they did not touch, they did not enter. Everybody saw that here is a phenomenon of a one nation, not many individuals, who is surrounded by a purpose. And what's the purpose? The connection to the divine that is in the midst of them. And this is how it was as long as we had the Beit HaMikdash. But then we went into exile. Does this mean that the divine is not with us anymore? When Yaakov went to Egypt, the first exile, leaving the land of Israel, Hashem told him, "Al tirav di Yaakov, don't worry, Yaakov." Why shouldn't you worry? He's going into exile, leaving the land of Israel that Abraham sacrificed so much in order to come to, the place where Hashem dwells, the place that he studied Torah. Finally, after many troubles and 22 years of being away from the land of Israel, he arrived there, and now he has to leave again. And where to? To the most difficult place, morally, spiritually, and physically. Hashem tells him, don't worry, why? He says, Anochi ered imcha. I am coming with you. Ve'anochi halcha gam alein. That's a guarantee that I'll bring you out as well. That's what's written when Yaakov is going down to Egypt. I'm coming with you. Meaning, we go to exile, the divine is still with us. It's hidden, but it's with us. And there is an external indication to it. Wherever we are, three times a day, when we say Shmone Esrei, what direction do we put ourselves? Facing Jerusalem. Jerusalem is still the center of our life, in exile too. What means Hashem is with us. Our sages tell us that the presence of the divine never left the Western Wall. Is it seen as at the time of the Beit HaMikdash? Of course not. There were people who saw it. I had a great-great-grandfather who said that when he comes to the Kotel Friday afternoon, he sees Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And Yerushalmi people really have a tradition of going to the Kotel Friday afternoon, even though they don't see the Avot, because of what he said, because he did see. Okay, so the divine is there. It's only more hidden. And our task to reveal it. That's the purpose of exile. In the hiddenness, to believe that Hashem is with us and cause the revelation of Hashem. We are now in a very hard time, all over the world, let alone in the land of Israel. Spiritually, physically, socially, nationally, many levels of despair and difficulty, division, many, many difficulties. Does this mean Hashem abandoned us? No, he's here. He's here, he's just hidden. It's not by an accident that Jewish people, when they think about escaping the difficulties, they come to Israel. Is the situation here easier? It seems that the war is here. Still, we feel safer here. Why? Because the presence of Hashem is here in a way that it's not outside of Israel. But Hashem is with us in exile too. When the first exile started after the destruction of the first temple, and the Jewish people went to Babylon, Hashem did something that is an exception. He gave Yechezkel prophecy outside of the land of Israel. Usually prophecy is given only in the land of Israel. Ben Yonah didn't want prophecy, he escaped from the land of Israel. He thought then he won't get prophecy. Right? So Yechezkel, even though he was in Babylon, in Babel, received prophecy. And interestingly enough, what was revealed to him was extraordinary. He saw what's happening in heaven. Why so? To tell the Jewish people, don't despair. You are in exile, but I'm with you. So that's what our week's parsha reveals to us. We are one nation. What makes us one nation? Our connection to the divine. And it cannot be that we won't be with the divine. Because A, we won't survive. Our survival is a miracle. And it's happening just because Hashem is with us. And if we don't survive, Chas v'Shalem, then the world won't survive. Then the world won't come to purpose. So each and every one of us is guaranteed that in one way or another, we'll fulfill our purpose as individuals, and we'll also fulfill our purpose as a nation. So we have A, to look at ourselves as people with an individual unique potential that only we can actualize, and with a contribution that we can give to our tribe, to our place of dwelling, to our nation that only we can give. And the combination of all those contributions will bring the ultimate revelation, hopefully very soon. Okay, I'll open up for questions and answers.
Before I unmute people, I just wanted to remind everybody that tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, we are having a pre-Shavuos class on the two ways to receive the Torah from 10 to 11. Okay, you should be able to unmute yourselves.
Okay, I have a question. We learned that 600,000 individuals left Mitzrayim and came to Har Sinai. When we know there are a few million, including the women and the children, why are we saying 600,000?
No, we speak only on the men from the age of 20 and above because we are counted as an army. It starts entering the land of Israel, and we are considered an army that is going to conquer the land of Israel. So only those who are capable of being part of the army are counted. Now, one more thing, okay? When we speak about men and women in the Torah, a man without a woman is a half without his partner, and a woman without a man is a half. Together, they are one, so it's included. Okay? And children are not yet fully there. It's the next generation. Okay?
Okay.
That's on a superficial level. Obviously, we can go more into it, but on a superficial level, whenever the Jewish people are counted, they're counted as an army.
Okay.
Okay? And it includes everybody. Obviously, we women stood at Sinai too.
Okay. I'm not asking in the feminist point of view. I understand.
But okay. The Torah perspective is that it's a household unit. That's why the younger children are not counted. It's households.
And even if the person is a single person,
it doesn't matter. He has a partner somewhere.
Okay.
Even if he didn't find it yet or won't find it, but he has a partner.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Rabbi Tzin, the parallel that you described the numbers of
letters in the Torah, the numbers of people counted is so powerful because we always say Torah is what is us, is our people. It's like it comes alive even more now with this with your class, it seems, with what you just with what you said. You know what I'm saying? It's
So
not just parallel,
one.
it's one.
One.
Torah, it's one. Torah, Jewish people, it's one.
Right. And Hashem. Because Torah
Hashem,
is
correct,
Hashem. Why
correct,
do I
correct.
add Hashem? Because it's a saying of our sages that
Right.
Hashem, the Torah, and the Jewish people are one.
And also it explains why always learning Torah is always so emphasized, like learn in times of difficulties, turn to the Torah, learn Torah, dwell in it. So because you said the more you do, you toil in it, the more you un, you reveal, each letter, reveals another meaning, another. So by dwelling in the Torah, you get more and more and more. So I thought that was very interesting. Very good. I
And I feel
kind of,
like
yeah,
them. Good.
thanks.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much for this
Sure.
amazing lecture that I think if I delved into it for 30 years, I will
Right.
not get it all. But you said the Goyim were jealous of us. Were the Goyim on such a level that they could appreciate or perceive the divine?
The concept that we have a special divine providence can be seen by non-Jewish people, and we have non-Jewish people who testified to it, who wrote about it, that we are a nation like no other one, right? They demand from us standards that they don't demand from anybody. I never saw an army that before they conquer a place, they, call the citizens and tell them leave. Right? Who prepare safe places for them, who gives them humanitarian help. Have you seen an army like this? And with all of it, they criticize us for those who are killed. And even though they made themselves, they created a reality that you cannot eliminate Hamas without eliminating people, unfortunately. They don't care about the people. And with all their wickedness, they demand from us to be angels, right? Obviously, they know that there is divinity here, if they admit it or not, but some men admit it too.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not jealous of us on a Gashmius level.
Mrs. Cohn, I accidentally muted you. I'm sorry. Unmute yourselves. You have to unmute yourself, Mrs. Cohn. Sorry.
Okay, I did. What
Sorry.
did you say? I didn't hear the
I said, did the
person.
Goyim, like, are they jealous of us on a Gashmius level or on a spiritual level? It doesn't look like these Hamas have any spiritual level.
They know our spirituality. And the proof to it is A, and that's the highest level, there are converts. Right? Obviously, they indicate that they checked it all, tried it all, and decided that this is the truth. But more than this, if I'll tell you a story, okay? The story is about one of the great people of the previous generation, right, who was killed in the Holocaust eventually. His name was Reb Moshe Bezalel. He was the son of the Sfat Emet, the brother of the Gerer Rebbe who did survive the war. He was supposed to be Rebbe after him, but he did not survive. But anyhow, he was a very great person. And while still being in the ghetto, but times were already very, very difficult, okay? So the Nazis broke into his house and started to look around for valuables, opened all the cabinets, all the closets, all, and gathered, different valuables. Then they saw him, right? They came to the room where he was and saw him. They left all the valuables, the search for valuables, and ran to him and pulled his beard very, very strongly. He had the babies in the room. And while they were doing it, pulling his beard, the baby started crying. They left him and ran to the baby and did to the baby whatever they did. I didn't see the details. So he said, I understood what the war is all about. They came for money, right? But they saw my beard. My beard stands for Judaism, for who we are. So they left everything and ran to me. Then they heard the baby. That's Jewish continuity. They left me and they ran to the baby. They do understand that our specialty is our spirituality. That's why they made sure on the holidays to attack us. In the Holocaust and always, our holidays were very, very dangerous when we were in exile, when we are in exile. Look at the Yom Kippur War, it's Simchat Torah, right? Because they know that's the source of our strength and they want to destroy it. So if they know it consciously or subconsciously, I don't know, but they know it.
Thank you.
Rebbetzin, you mentioned that you had expanded, you had spoken about this topic before. Where can I find that in the classes? Is there any like search word or something?
Any class on Bamidbar most probably will discuss the counting, each one from a different perspective. The counting and the camping from different perspectives. So you can hear many classes that will give you different aspects of it. So just choose whatever the topic speaks to you. And you can start in, usually in the beginning, I say what I'm going to discuss.
Okay.
If you listen for 2-3 minutes, you'll know what I'm going to discuss.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
If you check under the video and audio libraries on the Jewish Renaissance site, you'll find a slew of classes.
Yes, yes, I've seen those. I just wanted to know if there was a specific one, but yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Should have a good week, and I'll see you tomorrow if you want to listen to the class on Shavuot, and if not, next week in Yirtzeh Hashem. No, next week in Shavuot.
Correct. Right.
I don't think we have a class on Tuesday. Parsha class will be in 2 weeks. Okay.
Right.
All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rebbetzin. Thank you.
Sure. Call too.
Thank you.